Well, hello there. I'm Kimberly Hayes Daymuga.
And I'm Amanda Day.
And you're listening to the Fundraising Heyday podcast,
where we cover the how-tos of grants and fundraising.
And how we can all do a better job of changing the world through philanthropy.
Very true. If you like the way Kimberly and I tee up our how-tos and discuss trends in philanthropy, including grant writing and fundraising on this podcast, know that that's just us. This is how we are. It's how we teach, whether we're on the podcast, whether we're behind the Zoom camera, whether we are in person. So if your organization is looking to build some capacity to better understand grants for your team to be able to put together successful proposals, to work on fundraising together, we are the trainers, we are the coaches, we are the keynote addressers, we are the helpers that are more than pleased to show up at your door and say, hey, let us help and get you there. So if that's something you're interested in, email us at any time. You can find us at hello@heydayservices.com. It's our passion is helping organizations build their capacity. So give us a shout. We're happy to talk about ways that we can work together.
Hey there. We are thrilled at the Fundraising Heyday podcast to bring in Kim, Joyce, and Associates as a sponsor. This incredible grant consulting firm based in Arizona has worked with nonprofits, for-profits, agencies of all sizes, from tribal governments to hospitals, universities, and everything in between. CEO Kim Joyce is here to share some really interesting tips and tricks that she's learned in her lived experience in this incredibly successful firm. We're so glad you could join us. So Kim, we know that when it comes to getting grants, it probably shouldn't even be called grant writing, right? Because relationships are a big part of it, whether it's with program officers or trustees or whoever. One of the services that KJA offers is donor cultivation coaching. And what are maybe your top two tips that you could share with an organization working to build a meaningful relationship with the funder? It's not always easy.
Yeah, relationships do matter. We advise our clients to communicate with the funder and reach out to them when you don't need something. They want an ongoing relationship and not a call right before a grant is due. Build a genuine relationship. Funders are people just like us, and they can tell when something isn't genuine. Also, if it's a local or foundation funder, be inclusive. Invite them to your organization's events. They may say no, but it's better than them feeling like they weren't included. And then make them first on your list to call when you've experienced great success or start a new program or initiative. They'll be really appreciative of being one of the first people to know rather than seeing something, you know, on the internet or through a press release or something like that. And lastly, if things aren't going well and you're a current grantee, it's okay to reach out to the funder and talk to them about the challenges that you're having, because not everything goes as planned sometimes. And I guarantee you, you're not the only organization that is having challenges. So being honest and having that transparent, open relationship is really important.
Wise words. Thank you.
To find out more about the incredible team at Kim Joyce & Associates, visit kimjoyceandassociates.com. If you want to join a consulting firm who places value on integrity, excellence, and community, check out the career opportunities page. Kim is always on the lookout for her next great hire, as well as her next great client.
So it's no secret that we spend time on this podcast getting vocal about what's wrong, also known as ranting. I'll just speak for myself. I do a lot of ranting on this podcast about inequities and injustices and things that I see in sort of the field of philanthropy. But we both are also dedicated to bringing conversations with thought leaders and with those working to make positive changes. Because ranting can be good, but if all you ever do is rant and there are never any solutions or any sort of collective action, then things will just stay the same.
Very true. So today we are joined by two grant makers, change makers, they're not making grants, they're writing grants, but they're change makers from the growing collective of more than grant writers. We have with us today Patrice Shumate and Leanne Chong. In addition to their full-time commitments in consulting with nonprofits and other agencies, they continue to promote and support this growing community of grant professionals who are seeking true transformation in the grants world. So welcome to the show, Patrice and Leanne.
Hello.
We're glad to have you here with us today.
Thanks.
And we're just really excited to bring you both here. And I promise if you're listening, you're going to hear from both of them, and Amanda and I will try to keep our shenanigans to a minimum to give full range to all these really cool thoughts and ideas that are coming out. But that's actually an empty promise because I'm a goofball and things might happen. But what I'd love to do is go ahead and hop into our first question. And I'll direct this first to Leanne, and then I know that Patrice will have thoughts and feelings, completely normal, and opinions and want to share those. We'll start with Leanne. If you could let us know, what was the turning point or the deciding factor or factors that led to the formation of More Than Grant Writers?
Yeah, thank you so much. So I had recently found out about community-centric fundraising online, and I was so excited to dive in and get to know people in this space. And someone told me that the best way to interact with community-centric fundraising was through this Slack channel. So I was in the Slack channel getting to know people, and I found out that they had a grant writers meetup. So I just happened to go to the very first one that that turned up on my feed. And sure enough, some amazing people were there, including Susan Zakaib, who was about to give a GPA seminar the following week. And the title was Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, Are Funders Hitting the Mark? So she discussed possibly trying to, I guess, get people sort of more talkative about the issues that funders were raising with the kinds of practices that they were doing that were, I guess, for lack of a better term, like wasting grant writers' times unnecessarily. You know, like the parts where you get really frustrated and you're like, why? So having, for myself, having been in organizing spaces, I was like, oh my gosh, this is another cool thing to sort of get involved with, is how do we start mobilizing grant writers to sort of start saying the same things? And I also wanted to just sort of like be there at the talk to kind of like motivate people. And so I turned up to the talk, and it was a very, very lively conversation. I think Patrice, you were also there. So I think I'll let you take over the next part of the story.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, so More Than Grant Writers, I think when you kind of zoom in on when the conversations and the momentum started happening, was a series of events and conversations that came out of the GPA session about DEI and equity and funders. And when I had seen it come up in GPA, I thought, really, really? Like, are we really going to talk about this? Is it another one of those like panel of funder talks where you're just like, wah, wah, this is nothing helpful to me? But it was real information. Scott Nelson and Susan provided some legitimate information about the inequities in philanthropy. And the response in the call was really interesting. You could tell that people wanted to know more, but there was fear there. They didn't know how to talk about it. They didn't know how to ask about it. And, you know, let's be real about this profession. Not the most diverse profession in the world. So there's a lot of similar looking, sounding, relating people trying to understand this information that can sit really heavily and not know what to do with it. And so that conversation continued on in a CCF Slack channel where at some point we just all said, okay, what are we going to do? Like, we keep talking about this. These pain points are not going away. What are we going to do about it? And that's where the idea was, let's just remind grant professionals that we have a say in how this works too. And let's show up where they all go at the summit and tell them that and see what their feedback is and see if they relate to the kinds of conversations that are happening in these smaller spaces and make it a much larger, more consistent conversation within the profession that we can all be a part of.
A quick note, it's community-centered fundraising is a group on, it's mainly online, and we've referenced that before. And we'll just make sure that we put a link in the show notes for people who want more information. And GPA stands for Grant Professionals Association, if you're new to this podcast.
Yep, absolutely. Well, so that's how More Than Grant Writers kind of got your start, which I love that. How would you describe this group or movement to someone who has never heard of it? Like, this is the first time they're hearing about More Than a Grant Writer.
I would describe it, my interpretation of it is a validation of expertise and influence. And I say influence, but I also say power. But when people hear power, sometimes it kind of makes them step back. Not a lot of people want to have power, but we do have influence, whether we like it or not. As grant professionals, people trust us to know what we're doing and what we're talking about. And it's really fascinating in this profession that the things, the knowledge that we have and the skills that we learn branch and ripple out much further than the profession itself, as we're working with other people in the nonprofit spaces within the bigger philanthropic system. And so I think there's a responsibility here that we recognize there is power and influence innately in our jobs, even if we feel like we're the intermediaries. And I've heard nonprofit professionals say over and over again, we don't have any power to control what funders are doing. No, but we have influence. And if we ignore that, then we're not leveraging it to the best of our ability. So to me, it's validating that we know what we're talking about. If you get a bunch of grant professionals in the same room and ask them about needs and evidence to support the resources to combat those needs, the kinds of solutions that could be created, but we're really scattered and we don't always come together to say, hey, look at all this that we have and look what we can do as a collective group. So for me, that's my interpretation of it. Leanne, what's yours?
Oh, yeah, no, that's all super consistent with how I feel about the group. I think that we describe this group as, I mean, I come from it from a point of view where everyone has the ability to advocate. And if we come together and we advocate together, like think about the things that can change. And I love what Patrice says about validation of expertise and power and influence. I think it's really real. Like grant writers have a lot of positional power. They are sort of like, I mean, you know, in charge of the narrative almost. Of presenting that narrative to funders, but also at the same time, bringing the kinds of best practices that funders are requesting, I guess maybe the more progressive funders, those practices can be brought into the organizations, such as some, yeah, you know, like trying to put in evaluation practices that work and that are more equitable. So I think grant writers have that desire, but often grant writers are also siloed from the rest of the development team because the stuff that we do is so technical that I think, and when some, I have a feeling that sometimes like when we go to the staff for things, they're like, they want to run away because it's like pulling teeth, like getting information is like pulling teeth. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, it's like, I'm getting you money. Come on. Yeah. And so, I mean, it is this incredible sort of like feeling to be a resource mobilizer, but then at the same time, like we also hold all this information and think about what we can do if we started talking together and coming together and kind of finding those things that are the collective pain points, as Patrice mentioned. Like, how can we sort of start vocalizing these things so that funders will take note? And so I mean, it's with my background in organizing, we are looking at this as a community of both practice and learning. So the learning comes first to put everyone on the same page, and then the practicing comes through the like being on the same page, but also knowing that we're not alone in this work. Yeah.
Yeah,
That's
that's important.
amazing.
I know Kimberly and I have talked often before about how, especially the first, I don't know, 5, 7, 10 years of our work in the grant world, when you really don't know a lot of other grant professionals, and so many of us were just kind of thrown into this work that you don't know the power that you have or the power that you can bring to the table. And so the fact that y'all are organizing and reaching out to other people and teaching them, like, yes, it is it's not just they have the money and they get to say it is a two-way street, and we need to be a better job about building that two-way street. So I love the work you're doing.
Absolutely. And before we go to the next question, this is just, I promise I won't rant, but this is also a gentle reminder to everyone listening that actually grant makers are by law required to give away their money. So they wouldn't, it's a deeper partnership than I certainly realized when I first started writing grants, right? Foundations are required by law to give away 5%. Well, there are technicalities around that, but the percentage is 5% of the value of their assets in the previous year. So they exist to do this, and they wouldn't exist unless there were nonprofits to grant to, because I think it's really easy to go, we must ask them, we must fill out all the forms and supplicate, and maybe they'll, but really, when you think about it, they need us as much as we need them. For all the old history and drama and inequities that brings, that it's more of a partnership than it felt like when I first started writing grants. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what community-centric fundraising is about. It's about looking at this work as though it's a partnership and not this sort of strange power dynamic where,
Yeah.
oh, I'm too scared to talk to the funder. Funders are people. And maybe if we have more open conversations, things could change. Patrice, do you have anything else to add to that?
I'm afraid to, because if you get me started talking about foundation regulations and donor advised funds, and I just actually finished up a community-centric funding cohort that was facilitated by Gladiator Consulting here in my St. Louis community. And Rachel D'Souza, who owns Gladiator, she is on the Global Council of Community-Centric Fundraising and is just one of the most amazing human beings I've ever met. Part of that cohort was learning how philanthropy started, like the very first foundation, where that came from and who was a part of that and what the points of it were. And
Yeah.
spoiler, we still exist in some of those frameworks that were not really designed to benefit and support the actual work going, the work that's being covered by an entire sector, because it's not being covered in other places in our society. So I'll stop there, because talk about shenanigans, I can get rolling.
Yeah.
I sense some
What's
major
up?
common ground here. But also something that Leanne was talking about too, I think that we've all mentioned, not only that sort of silo effect, right? But I'm going to go out on a demographic limb, not supported by any studies that I can actually refer to. But many grant professionals I have met in my experience as a grant professional lean more toward being introverted. I don't think that's going to be shocking. They're exceptions. I work with a beautiful exception, Amanda Day. But in terms of that, first you have the silo effect, then you have many people might be drawn to this aspect of fundraising because of the communication is leaning more toward written rather than verbal, right? So you've got a lot of things going on that might parse that out, which could also lead to, if so many grant professionals do identify as being introverted, there might be even maybe an additional barrier that they might give themselves against speaking out on these kinds of issues that we just addressed. So I would like to start with Leanne, who has identified as a fellow introvert. Should it be sister introvert? It should just be a person who is also an introvert. What advice would you offer other introverts who are like, oh, I don't want to speak out, or we won't get the grant if I raise hell or whatever? What would what would you say?
I guess, yeah, as a lifelong introvert, like I've always been the shy one. I've always sort of like not been terribly drawn to the social events and things like that. I think that as an introvert, feelings do run really deep, and sometimes those frustrations need to come out somehow, because then I feel like with introverts, especially, you know, like we do have those feelings and thoughts about things, and in many ways I want to say activism is good for your health, because it lets you have an outlet for those feelings of frustration that are valid. And it's not just that, like, I mean, introverts do also need that sense of community. So by providing this as a space of community, fellow grant writers who are introverts also are able to find out that they're not alone in their sort of like feelings of frustration around certain things. I mean, it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful when you get that grant, but also sometimes it's like, why do I have to cut and paste all these things into separate little cells on a form? This can be so much easier. And those sorts of things. And so, that's, I guess, what I would tell introverts. Did that sort of answer your question? I feel like I kind of went on a tangent there.
Oh, yes, because Liam, we never go on tangents on this podcast. No, ma'am, we never do that. No, that's your experience. And you make such a valid point that even if you're not always blatting on about your feelings, you know, in a very externally facing way, it doesn't mean you don't have them. And it also doesn't negate the need for community. So it's just, those are super important. But I would also turn to Patrice as someone who professed to perhaps be more extroverted. Would there be a different spin or an additional spin on helping introverted grant professionals find their voice in this kind of work? Something, a piece of advice that you could give someone in that boat?
Yeah, well, as somebody who has never considered herself an introvert for a second of her life, I forget that not everybody wants to be full-blown center stage saying things really loudly all the time. And it's something I also have to keep in check, because people don't want to get yelled at and made to feel guilty about what they think is their job and that they're doing. And so I think it's understanding that there's a balance. Like collective action, advocacy work, change making, it's a team sport. It takes all of us coming from a lot of different places and perspectives. And one of the things that we did in our very first More Than Grant Writers session was introduced Deepa Iyer's social change ecosystem map. It's one of my most favorite things in the world. I swear at this point, people probably think I'm a paid spokesperson because I talk about it to like strangers all the time. I think it is a beautiful representation to remind us that it takes so many different kinds of people, so many different skills, so many different views to make real change happen. And the ecosystem map, it's really pretty. It's 10 roles that center equity and justice and collective action. And there's things on there like builders, healers, storytellers, disruptors. And it's a place for people to really lean into their own skills, their own personality, and match up with the people that complement what they're doing. And even in the work that we've been doing as More Than Grant Writers, there's a team of us who have been trying to get these different learning sessions and understand where we fit in both the grant profession and in philanthropy and society as a whole. And you might see or hear me more because I like it, but there are definitely people that are doing the quieter behind the scenes work. And I think it takes everybody doing those things together in the same direction. And so I also would say that recognizing between extrovert and introvert, there's also a group of people, whether or not they identify one way or another, have likely already experienced situations where they're not allowed to have a voice. And they've learned that having a voice can be dangerous to you. And especially in a profession, again, that doesn't have a ton of diversity in it, there are people that have never been given a safe space to have that voice. And so it's something that we think and talk about when we're doing our calls to action and our presentations with people, that we're building safety and bravery at the same time, and that each person kind of has their own pace and where they fit into that. And I think it's important that it's easy for us to just label something and then kind of sit on that, and trying to build in a little bit more introspection and challenge ourselves to get slightly uncomfortable before we get really uncomfortable can be a helpful tool for getting to something a little bit bigger than ourselves.
Yeah. Well, and I would say I'm like you, Patrice, extrovert my whole life, but that doesn't mean that 20 years ago I would have been willing to stand up and say, hey, funder, I don't agree with this. This isn't right. Because until I heard other people saying these things and realizing like, oh, I don't just have to sit back, write the grant, follow the rules to get money. I can be part of this collective that's making a difference. And so I don't know that in some ways, I think whether you're introvert or extrovert, it may differ, like you said, Patrice, on what role you play in the change. But I think more than anything is just understanding that you're not alone in thinking things need to be better, and that there is a platform to be able to say your piece.
And we're playing around with some ideas, because there's a big difference in the anonymity of it, right? As a group, saying something together versus I'm sending a direct email to a single person calling something out. And so we're playing around with ideas that allow More Than Grant Writers to step in and do that for someone that doesn't have the power. Sort of crappy funding practices came out recently and is a group on LinkedIn that calls funders out. And so people have the ability to send in the crappy funding practices they've experienced, and it's called out in another way. And it depends on what platform you have. And some of us are given platforms and some of us have to build them ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, I recognize a considerable amount of privileged identities that I hold that make it so that backlash I receive is not going to destroy me. Mm-hmm. I have the privilege to weather that more than other people. And so I'm trying to use platforms that exist around me for this kind of work. But it's something that we understand, and we're trying to figure out, can we be the voice for people? Or is it teaching people to have a voice, or is it a combination of both of them? And so we're interested to see how that plays out this year.
Yeah. I would think both could be true.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Well, that kind of leads right into my next question about what does advocacy look like for More Than a Grant Writer? And maybe if you could share some recent examples. Oh,
More Than Grant Writers. It's
More Than Grant Writers. Yep. Sorry.
More Than Grant Writers.
So if y'all could give me some examples of some advocacy you've done, or maybe you're planning.
I'll quickly share about the calls to action, and then Patrice, maybe you can talk a little bit more about the long-term sort of aspects of it. So we are kind of, we're just sort of like growing those advocacy muscles. Like, advocacy can be anything, right? It can be telling your funder, hey, that's, you know, the sort of like amount that you allow for overhead expenses is too low. Maybe that's too scary, but or it can also look like, let's all go and tell the government, the OMB, that the federal de minimis rate is too low. So mm-hmm. that's what we did recently. We there was a call to raise the de minimis rate from, what was it, 11 to 15?
From 10% to 15%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're like, yes, let's do it. I mean, we'll take whatever gains we can get. So we sent out a call to everyone on our newsletter. We one of our team wrote Fielding Jezreel mm-hmm. wrote a template for folks to copy and paste into the correct place. I mean, it's all those very little things about making it easier to do advocacy together. So yeah. There's some structural things that we're looking at doing. Some other ones are to encourage people to fill out a grant advisor review. And as a public utility that is that sort of like wants to be able to inform funders how they can do better. I mean, this is a wonderful, wonderful way of grant writers being able to communicate as one of many voices as to how funders are doing. Another advocacy thing that we're planning on doing, which is actually going to be our April call on the 24th of April, is we're going to be getting folks to talk about ARPA funding and what we can do about ARPA funding. And yeah, so those are some ways that I guess what advocacy looks like for More Than Grant Writers. And Patrice, love for you to share some longer term things.
Yeah, to me, advocacy has just always made sense. I'm a social worker. My background is in social work, and I've worked in a lot of places, and I have a particular focus and interest on macro social work and systems change. And so it doesn't make sense to me that not everybody thinks about advocacy. And I always have to, like, all right, I got to backtrack because they haven't been talking about this for their entire career. But it's so simple. It always starts with, what are we already doing? What are we already doing? And how are we going to build off of that? It's not about jumping into some brand new role in space with, pitchforks and burned bras, right? Like, totally cool with the bra burning. I think that should just be an annual event for the rest of our lives. But we're already doing things. You know, what's so cool about the grant profession? It is a group of some of the most brilliant and scrappy people I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And the kinds of solutions and resources that are created within the profession to benefit our ability to do our jobs is really cool. And when I really got more into grant work and started to create a business out of it, I kept thinking, why are we spending so much energy like creating these internal solutions rather than just talking outside of the profession and saying, why do we have to create these solutions? You guys are creating these problems. And I don't think it's much of a stretch to go to a group of grant professionals and say, hey, what can we do about this one particular problem? What are we already doing, right? What are our skills? We already know how to craft beautiful messages. What do we need to be saying in those messages, and who does it need to be sent to? There's all kinds of ideas. I just get so excited thinking about the creativity and the ideas that can go into advocating for something better. I was just reading an article about that breaks down 990s. Like, what is each section? And it still kind of blows my mind that on a 990, you have to break out your expenses and your revenue specific to administration and fundraising. Like, the fundraising is specifically pulled out on our legal form that we have to report. It's all part of it, right? Like, if we're going to do good stuff, we have to raise the money. Why are we turning this into a completely separate conversation? So maybe one day we have IRS change the form. Who knows, right? Like, the sky's the limit in what we can do together when we all identify something that could and can be changed. So, I mean, I don't know what the future holds. This is our first year, and it's been really exciting to hear people's interest and feedback and where people are willing to step up or speak up. But man, I think we could do some things.
Yeah, I think y'all could too.
So I've been taking notes. I have people who can't see, I'm holding up a piece of paper that has all this little scribble scrabble all over it with just ideas and references and things. And we've already sort of started moving into this next question, but I do want to ask it to see what other ideas can percolate out of this conversation. So I'll start with Patrice. Clearly, you're not very excited about this at all and have spent no time thinking about it. But seriously, for people that you mentioned who maybe never even thought about it. When I first started writing grants, I was like, I got to do all the things to get the money so that people can do the good things. And it was I was very focused, and I was evaluated on how much I dumped into that revenue bucket at the end of every fiscal year. But I'm wondering if we could just keep this dialogue going a little bit longer and other ways to, for maybe grant professionals who have not spent that time or maybe just getting into it, or who, as a consultant and as somebody with a lot of privilege, I can stay and do things now that as a younger person starting out in a career and as an employee, I couldn't. Mm-hmm. But how can we help folks who may be just starting out or who may be working for an employer versus out on their own? How can we sort of help them understand their true power? Because I feel like that's just been the theme, right? To be that bridge between the nonprofits and related agencies or local governments and philanthropic organizations or other grant makers. What are some ways we can approach that?
I think number one is to really be curious about why things are the way they are and right. Do a little bit of digging just to understand, you know, where do you exist and what is influencing you and who and what are you influencing in your particular position? And it just takes some time to look and to have these conversations in community and to understand, you know, status quo can be fine, but sometimes it's not. And you don't have to start with, you know, the picket signs, and you can start in a really positive way. Very recently, there was a funder I've kind of been paying attention to here in this local community. They've been changing some things up, and I've been really curious about where that's coming from. And I'm seeing some trust-based philanthropy kind of come out of there. And so there was an email on their website, and I don't know these people. I've never talked to any of the folks on, you know, their trustees or their board or whomever. And I reached out and I said, hey, I've been paying attention to you. I think what you're doing is really cool. I appreciate the resources you're coming out with outside of just your funding cycles. I would love to talk to you to learn more about what your vision is for this community, because I think it's really cool. And somebody on the board said, well, here's the consultant person that we're working with. Why don't you talk with them? And I had a conversation with her, and right? Like, you don't have to start yelling at people for doing something wrong. There are people doing really amazing, cool things. Start with them and see what their influence is. And maybe you can just kind of like push them in the direction to do something a little bit more. And it doesn't have to be on your back. But I do think there really is a significant difference of influence between grant professionals that are in-house, salaried grant professionals, and consulting professionals. And there's a lot more flexibility for freelancers and consultants to figure out how to show up here versus people that their name is attached to that organization and the work that's going on. I love the anonymity of being a consultant, and I can send all kinds of emails. Recently, our local government put out like 6 different NOFAs, all different kinds of funding, and they have this brand new portal. Terrible portal. It's awful. You can't download anything and turn it into a draft. And I emailed them and I said, you need to change this. They don't know who I am. They don't know what organizations I'm working with. I'm like, this is a bad portal and it makes it really difficult for people to do this work. Are they going to change it? I don't know. But it didn't hurt anybody for me to say that. And at some point, maybe that comment will take hold. And so I do think I don't want to call it a responsibility because I don't want to put something on people that haven't been able to really understand this yet. But there is a lot more flexibility, I'll say, for people that aren't directly attached to a specific organization. And I hope that they see that and they use it as an opportunity to grow into some of those advocacy things in their community, rather than just assuming they don't have any power to make any change. So from my perspective, kind of those are the two main. Do a little digging as to why we do any of these things. Like, do character counts really truly have to exist? Do they? Mm. No, they don't. Mm. Why don't we have character ranges? Like, if we have to box it in somewhere, is there a reason I can't have one more character?
Yeah.
Than what the box allows. Silly things like that yeah. I think we could make some differences in, but we maybe just don't think about it enough. And recognizing, you know, where that flexibility lies and you being able to say or do something. But of course, it's a much larger conversation about bosses and positioning and all of those kinds of things that we do try and recognize and talk about. I don't know. What do you think, Leanne?
I mean, I just wanted to say, even in my position back when I was working with an art museum, I would just say things to funders like, I didn't really care because I think I was well aware of like the kind of privilege that the museum held within the community. And I was also well aware that like smaller organizations did not even have the kinds of resources that I had at my fingertips or like the ability to even hire a grant writer like myself mm-hmm. to write for them. So I was like, well, this needs to have someone. I mean, this issue needs someone to say something about it. Otherwise, how will they know? So I kind of found myself just having conversations, sending emails, and the funders were actually really open to hearing what I had to say because they knew that I guess the other thing was that you do have to have some sort of power analysis going on of like what the dynamics are, and also understanding that inequity does not need to be there. And also I guess what I'm trying to say, if you don't speak up, who will? Mm-hmm. And having had a background in sort of like community organizing, I didn't hold back. I didn't find that funders had a problem with me saying things very nicely. It's just a conversation, right? It's like just telling them what they're doing right and how what maybe needs to be improved. And I think that it's really important to be able to sort of see and understand, and if you don't speak up, who else has that privilege and platform to speak up? But at the same time, yeah, you do need to be careful. But I think, yeah.
It's easy and it's dangerous to fall into an assumption that there's always going to be backlash from some sort of communication or criticism or critique. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, right, it's not a bunch of like people, you know, twiddling their evil mustaches and Mr. Burns fingers back behind the scene. Like most grant making is just tradition, right? It's if you have collective giving groups, especially corporate giving, they grab a hold of what seems like stable grant making practices without thinking through what it means or what is required for someone to respond to those things. And it's probably because nobody has ever said, hey, that's really burdensome. Like the amount of time it took me to do your application for $3,000 and the receipts that I have to keep and provide to you next time. And just don't. Okay. Like, I promise we'll spend it on what we said. And if we don't, we're still going to spend it on something that's needed. So let's just be clear about that. And it's not because they're evil, terrible people. I mean, some of them might actually be in limited cases, but for the most part, they're just humans. They're just humans with access to a whole lot of money. And there's nothing that says we don't have the perfect amount of expertise and interest to share with them a different or better way to do something.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, a lot of my experience with working directly with funders is on like the federal and state level. And one of the things I found there, I often felt more comfortable saying my piece, even when I was an employee, because really they're just following the rules that has been handed down to them. Yeah. And so oftentimes we could build a great relationship and there would be, because you know who's going to be receptive to things and who's just like slugging out the work. And there are plenty of times where I could just say, hey, have y'all ever thought about that? And usually their answer was either no, or hey, I'll run it up the flagpole. So it's not really even me going, hey, you're doing this badly. It's just like, hey, has the organization ever, have any of you ever taken your own application before? Yeah, no, actually I haven't. I'm like, you may want to give that a whirl. That may open up a whole can of worms for you. I'm just going to throw that out there. Right. So you're right. Even if you are employed, it's not the consultant only job to help make change. Even if you're embedded in an organization, I'm not saying you're doing it all the time, but I think you know when there are opportunities that the people are going to be more receptive. And you're right, based on maybe where you're working, you may be working at an organization with more clout, so it'll go over better, but there's certainly opportunities. And I think the more we can all get braver in taking those opportunities rather than let them fly, you know, slide by, we'll start making those changes happen a little bit faster.
Yeah.
What if we were just trained in that? Like, what if it was just a normal part of our training and our professional curriculum that you don't have to just take things?
Yeah. What?
Through that.
I'm like that. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been great having you here. We want to wrap up. We're going to kind of combine some information here, but would love to hear just some opportunities that are coming up with More Than Grant Writers and how people can find you all. And so they can jump into this great work. So if y'all want to let us know what's coming, that'd be great.
Sure. Well, on, I guess when this drops, the week after, on April 24th, we will have our usual monthly call. It's open to anyone and everyone. It's free to attend. We will be, as mentioned, we will be using this as a working call to discuss things that we can do collectively. So we've spent a few months learning about partnerships, how to create equitable nonprofit partnerships, and we're learning, well, on Wednesday, we're learning about how to put a funder briefing together, so which I'm super, super excited about. And this will be a chance for folks to come together and collaborate or talk about what they can do together as grant professionals. Yeah.
So do y'all always meet like the third Wednesday? Do y'all have a set meeting every month that y'all meet? Like, is it always the third Wednesday at a certain time or something like that?
It's always a third week. Either Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday. We thought we might be a little bit special and change the day. Just because some people have like standing things on Wednesdays or yeah, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And
have a session that'll be coming up soon after May or maybe later. about data equity and understanding, how data is pulled together and how, if we're surveying people, how are we using it? So there's a really cool, professional that works on that, and she'll be coming to. But for finding us, we probably the most up-to-date information will be on our LinkedIn. So you can follow More Than Grant Writers on LinkedIn. And if you sign up ever for a session or through our newsletter, sign up on the website, you'll get the newsletters that come out that are always, there's always ones leading up to a session to prepare you for what that is. And then there's always follow-up ones that have the recording. We record most of them, like the open sessions, not really the discussions between other people in case they're not comfortable showing up on that recording since they're public. And so the newsletters are just full of links and resources and all kinds of things. And so if you get tapped into those, you pretty much have everything that you need. And if people are interested in joining, we're not like a closed team of people. If anybody wants to participate in how these sessions work and what the future of More Than Grant Writers is, we're definitely open to more folks, and takes all of us, you know.
That it does.
It's very true. Listen, thank y'all so much. I, again, my notes, my little list of questions has been overwhelmed with my blue ink, taking all these great notes, all these resources. We'll be sure to provide links to those. I just found it really inspiring. Thanks so much for coming on and letting us know how we can all make a difference in the ways that make sense, but also to gently remind us all that it is something that we can do. It's not just limited to a few people.
Yeah. Well, we can't have a collective voice if there's not somebody willing to collect us all together to have that voice. So thank you. I know, I'm sure this is a labor of love for you both, and I appreciate that you're doing it, but we recognize that it takes time and effort and brain cells, and you all have your own full-time lives and jobs, and you're doing this on top of all that. So yeah, we appreciate the work.
Thank you so much for having us today. Really, it's really wonderful.
Well, thanks for joining us. Thanks again to today's sponsor, Kim Joyce & Associates. If you want to learn more about career opportunities and client relations with this growing business, visit kimjoyceandassociates.com. That's KimJoyce and associates.com.
Well, I hope that you were as inspired as I was. I was scribbling notes and writing.